Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, Georgia public health departments could deviate from the CDC on vaccine recommendations. Union City celebrates the opening of its first ever electric vehicle charging stations. And with the possible elimination of FEMA, what does hurricane preparedness now look like for Georgia?
If I get another storm, I truly do not know where that money's coming from. I will just have to change the expectation of our citizens.
Today is Wednesday, September 10th. I'm Orlando Montoya, and this is Georgia Today. A former Democrat who switched to Republican in the Georgia House of Representatives is challenging longtime state school superintendent Richard Woods for next year's GOP nomination. Misha Maynor, who clashed with Democrats over her support for private school vouchers, joined several Republicans who want to prevent Woods from winning a fourth term as the state's education leader. Fred Bubba Longreer of Candler County, Randall Trammell of Cartersville, and Nelva Lee of Locust Grove also are in the race. Maynor cast herself as an independent voice, saying she switched from Democrat to Republican because her former party represented, quote, authoritarianism. She lost her seat in the heavily Democratic district to a Democrat in the November 2024 general election. Georgia's public health departments could deviate from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's recommendations on vaccines, according to statements from public health leaders at a meeting yesterday. GPB's Sophie Gratis has more.
A change in federal approval for updated COVID vaccines means most adults and kids have not been able to get the shots at their local pharmacy without a prescription. The Georgia Department of Public Health is waiting to offer its own stock of COVID vaccines until the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices meets next week to make their recommendations, said Commissioner of Public Health Kathleen Toomey.
If it is really out of line with what we feel is appropriate, given the science and epidemiologic trends as we know it, we can make decisions then.
Toomey said she is committed to the quote-unquote importance of vaccine access for Georgia's children and that she's in active conversations with Georgia's Governor Brian Kemp. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jason Estevez of Atlanta is resigning from his seat in the Georgia Senate. Estevez said today he wanted to focus on his campaign for governor. Governor Brian Kemp will call a special election to fill his seat. A large number of current elected officials are running for statewide office in 2026, and more of them could choose to resign. That's in part because most elected officials in Georgia can't raise campaign money during the legislative session, which runs from January to April. That restriction can cut off funding during the months before the May primaries. A charter flight arrived in Atlanta today to bring back South Korean workers detained in a massive immigration raid in southeast Georgia. About 300 South Koreans were among 475 workers rounded up at a battery factory at the sprawling Hyundai plant in Bryan County. Savannah Mayor Van Johnson addressed the raid in his weekly media briefing yesterday.
You know, after all of the work that went into recruiting South Korean companies here, and the huge impact that the Hyundai plant has for this region, I'm certain that, you know, we don't want incidents like this.
The mayor said Savannah police were not involved in and had no advance warning of the raid. Leaders in Union City, south of Atlanta, celebrated World Electric Vehicle Day on yesterday by cutting the ribbon on the city's first public charging stations. GPB's Amanda Andrews has more.
Union City now has 8 Level 2 electric vehicle charging stations. Funding for the project was approved under the Biden administration as part of a collaboration with Georgia Power. The utility program provides, installs, and maintains chargers for municipalities. Union City Mayor Vince Williams says it's important for residents to have access to this technology.
And if we didn't do anything, we are doing a disservice to our community. So we're making sure we got people in our community, people on our staff, many of our neighbors who already have EV vehicles. And they've been asking, you know, when are we going to have EV charging stations? So we wanted to make sure we did that.
Union City Police and Fire Departments are also in the process of electrification and will have their own charging stations. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
Hurricane season is here, and all this week at GPB, we're giving you the information you need to know to help you prepare for the next storm. Valdosta Mayor Scott Matheson has kept us updated on Hurricane Helene recovery efforts in his city, where Helene caused extensive damage in September of last year. He joins me now for our Hurricane Preparedness Week. Mayor, it's good to talk with you again.
Oh, good to talk with you, too. It's not my favorite subject, though, I promise you.
Well, first of all, how are things going in Valdosta?
Good. We're just now entering the long-term recovery phase. For the next 2 years, we'll be organizing efforts, groups that will still once again descend on our community, offering to help all over again, the godsend that they are. And we'll organize those. We'll organize everything into the community that is necessary, from still feeding to still repairing to still removal of debris and trees.
Looking back at the year since Helene, what do you know now about hurricane preparedness that you wish you had known before the storm?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Best laid plan. We're very good at community preparedness. We're very good at emergency management preparedness. But you can't dig the Grand Canyon. For stormwater and otherwise, there's a lot that gets overwhelmed. And there's just no level of preparing. There's knowledge that it can happen to you. There's knowledge on where you can get a little better. But, we put 550 county employees, 650 city employees to work on a cleanup, and we were probably about 5,000 too short. So that the groups that come to town make a big difference. So your best laid plans, 70 agencies coming together, all the resources at your disposal, and there's still not enough.
What issue is Valdosta still grappling with the most since Helene?
Reimbursement, I'm afraid to say. The city of Valdosta is still waiting $17 million in reimbursement. That's an expense we've already put out there. So in a very fiscally responsible city, we might be approaching not a cash problem, but a cash flow problem in our world. You don't just wake up one day and say we can put $17 million outlaid into the community for community repair and debris pickup and everything else, and not have it come back to us in short order. So we're $17 million light, and that's probably the biggest problem we're facing right now.
Is that $17 million that needs to come from the state, the feds, or both?
Federal government, but I imagine it'll pass through GEMA, yes. The federal government designated 100% reimbursement, and we went right to work. We dipped into to funds and rainy day funds, and we did what we had to do to get the citizens back to some sense of normalcy, but we're waiting on reimbursement for that, so that's our number one.
Recent cuts to FEMA have left many current and former employees of the agency concerned about FEMA's capacity to respond to major disasters. How did FEMA respond to Helene and Valdosta, and are you worried about that help being there in the future?
Yeah, I got nothing but praise for FEMA. FEMA in our community, for Helene especially, wrote $59 million worth of direct assistance. They wrote $59 million worth of checks to our citizens in one county alone. So you can do the math on, 44 other counties in our state and multiple states beyond that. I don't know how they do it. But for us, we had ARPA funds that we shifted in Idalia to respond immediately. We had vast cash reserves in Helene to respond immediately. But if I get another storm, I truly do not know where that money's coming from. I will just have to change the expectation of our citizenry. It's going to be a lot longer in recovery, or I'm going to be a lot slower to respond. We don't have that resource again.
In June, the city broke ground on a $32 million wastewater treatment facility. How will that impact storm preparedness in the community?
Oh, everything. What we actually broke ground on was another water treatment plant. We have long since 2014, we went online with a brand new wastewater treatment facility, a 7.5 million gallon holding pond beside that. We're actually going to double that in capacity in the next couple of years. So all that was wonderful. The force main spine was wonderful. And here's what we took great pride in. And I think I preach this all over the state. Through all the chaos, you could still flush a toilet and you could still go to your sink and have water in the city of Valdosta. Now in the county with wells, that was a different situation. You had to have power. But through it all, we kept those services flowing, and we take great pride in that. That was no easy feat.
What kind of relationships did Valdosta forge during Helene with corporate, nonprofit, faith-based, and other private relief agencies that could step in to help the city in the future disaster scenario?
Yeah, lifelong friendships. I'll name some and forget twice as many. The Minutemen, 8 Days of Hope, Samaritan's Purse was a godsend. They stayed months longer than they said they were going to stay. They stayed through February. Amazing groups. The Catfish Navy, they came in and fed us for 3 days. Again, total strangers. It's no subtle thing that you have to treat them well when you're here. You got to say thank you. You got to house them and you got to feed them. Or guess what? It's a one and done. So we have forged wonderful relationships with those groups. And I hope they benefited as well. Through every interview, we tout them. Through every interview, we thank them. And we hope that means some level of funding. We have given back directly to those organizations. After Idalia, we acted on a COAD, Community Organizations Active in Disasters. What we do well is infrastructure. What they now do well is the human factor. Organizing every bit of the feeding efforts, every bit of the relief efforts through that organization takes that load off our emergency management response, which is supposed to be clearing roadways and critical and key infrastructure and stormwater. So that COAD is something that we have since organized with all our United Way, Second Harvest Food Bank, and all our human service organizations. So if you want a major improvement, that's it.
Will the city recognize the Helene anniversary in a few weeks with any public events?
I do not want to, no. I just saw the 20-year anniversary of Katrina and a party and a street party. And I was going, no, that's not for me. I'd rather have it forgotten.
Well, that's Valdosta Mayor Scott Matheson. Thanks again for talking with me. When dangerous weather is on the way, knowing that help will be available on the other side of the storm can help calm anxiety. Experts say addressing mental health is a critical part of disaster preparation. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
Knowing what infrastructure and disaster relief systems are in place decreases uncertainty and helps protect mental health during hurricane season. That's according to Dr. Neha Patak, the co-founder of Georgia Clinicians for Climate Action.
But with our climate uncertainty, it can be a major lifeline to know that you have some community connection that's going to check in on you if there's a heat wave and your power goes out, or if you're having trouble with your medications or accessing your medications.
And Dr. Patak says having that information is important because data on weather and climate change shows severe weather events are only expected to increase. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
Atlanta-based convenience store chain Racetrack is buying sandwich maker Potbelly for $566 million. Potbelly was founded in Chicago in 1977 and has 445 restaurants across the U.S. Potbelly says the deal with Racetrack will help it reach its goal of quadrupling in size to 2,000 stores. Racetrack operates more than 800 convenience stores in 14 states. Racetrack was founded in 1934 and is family-owned. The deal calls for Racetrack acquiring all of Potbelly's shares for a little more than $17 per share, all in cash. Georgia-Pacific plans to buy a Missouri-based manufacturer of rigid food containers and cling film. The Atlanta-based pulp and paper giant announced its plans for Anchor Packaging on Monday. The company says the acquisition, focused on the food service, retail, and processor markets, will complement its own Dixie brand of consumer products. And finally, what started out as a form of self-care during the pandemic is now a therapeutic habit for many. A research team at the University of Georgia's College of Agriculture and Environmental Science has published a study on people who buy flowers for home or work. It says flower buyers report feeling better. Quote, almost like therapy, according to the study's lead author. The report also says flower acreage in the U.S. doubled between 2017 and 2022, thanks in part to local farms growing flowers that don't ship well, like zinnias and dahlias. And here's a virtual flower for you for showing up today for today's podcast. I appreciate you being here for Georgia Today. If you'd like to learn more about these stories, visit gpb.org/news. We have many of the stories that you hear on the podcast on the website in greater detail. If you'd like you to hit subscribe on the podcast, we always remind you to do that because it helps you and it helps us by keeping you current with us in your feed. And if you have feedback, send it our way. We love feedback at georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Orlando Montoya. I'll be with you again tomorrow.